Okay. These poems are the last from Wild Grape Wine. Japanese painter. Hokusai raised a great 50-foot framework of bamboo and red tissue paper, higher than medium-sized pagodas, and painted his thoughts on them, along with mountain landscapes, and shrieked Eureka at the stars in Japanese. Of course, the wind came by to wreck his paper canvas during the hour of the rat. Everyone thought he was a damn fool. Fortunately, he wasn't married. The rickshaw boys made wisecracks, and the charcoal burners razzed him. The beggars made faces behind his back. The moneylenders said he was a bad risk. The sake drinkers kept right on drinking, and small boys continued the countdown. 1, 2, 3, 4, before the monster painting slowly toppled into the dust. Myself, I'm less ambitious than Hokusai, and my writings failed to please me. I burned them during the hour of despond, providing heat for cold nights. My wife said I ought to get a job, and the neighbors kept pitying her. But since universities started paying money for old worksheets, I preserved them carefully in fireproof boxes, and no longer sadly compare myself to Hokusai, weeping bitterly over the cook stove. Portrait of some neighbors. Alf Ely and his family lived next door in a prefab house painted white. Alf works on the roads for the township, runs the big yellow grader in summer. In winter, the little man wearing glasses drives the snowplow over the new fallen world. Alf's wife hires out to other men's wives, scrubs their floors and cleans their bathroom for 75 cents an hour, and uses the money to buy things they can't afford. Their daughter works in town, and perhaps now is beginning to realize what life is doing to them, and directing her own thoughts to catching a man. Mrs. Ely comes over 3-4 times a week. She and my wife drink tea and talk together, and it bores the living hell right out of me. For my own amusement, I sometimes give an opinion on something that couldn't possibly be known to her, and Mrs. Ely agrees with me. Alf is a little more cautious in what he agrees with. A family for whom things like a flat tire or bargains are much more important than they are for me. A family of basic conservatives, resisting change. And Mrs. Ely is a kind of walking gossip column who occasionally says something damn funny. Last week a car offered her a lift on the road, and she called the police, believing they meant no good. I was amused by that whenever I thought of it. Alf himself isn't a bad guy, and we get along, though our range of talking topics is limited. He and his wife think on different levels than me. I steer clear of things intellectual, though I certainly deny I'm one of those. They talk of weather, the crops and roads, how old Pete died of a broken neck in a ditch, and how he gave Alf a beer earlier the same day, and how the roads foreman doesn't know his job, and how bad the mosquitoes are this year, and maybe it's the H-bombs doing it. I get bored with conversations like that. There is a world I know of where Alf and his family exist, and I left some time ago, which Alf suspects, of television programs and pleasure in buying things, of what their daughter said or someone else said. They live in it and go to its church, which tells them what's wrong with their world. Do they like me? I think they might, perhaps, though they know I have thoughts outside my talk and think of things they don't know about. I try to make this fact unobtrusive as possible, and believe Alf goes along with me in that, all of which means we're pretty good neighbors. At this point, if you really want to know what's wrong with their world and my world when we meet, read this poem through again, or maybe once is enough. RCAF Short Arm Parade. Blue uniforms and blank faces straggling here from the mess hall. A human assembly line bound for venereal inspection. It seems a public disgrace to be merely asked the question, did you, are you, could you? Reflects unfavorably on girlfriends. More than that, it makes all women accusers of your male instincts. And hot carnal thoughts at midnight shrivel into shamed limpness while hordes of hideous shrieking hags parade the barracks and demand castration. The lump of flesh between your legs shrinks small and quivers like a blind night animal. The young apple-cheeked Flight Louie just out of medical school nevertheless seems bored at so many almost identical pricks, like anxious hitchhikers passing foreign customs and stamped okay. Billions of partly human babies pass between rows of hospital petunias, slung in tiny hammocks, anticipating lullabies. Roblin Lake. 10,000 years ago, glaciers left the lake as an afterthought, a blink of light to signal winged navigators dropping blinded out of the sun. Then the rubbery land rising, released from its burden of ice. Then deciduous forest and animals, finally humans. Native villages living only a few miles from here. And the first Europeans, chattering dwarfs in the quiet. French and then English explorers. John Way built a mill near this lake. Owen Roblin succeeded him in 1842, each in brief residence. And now the summer cottagers. Of course, there is no written history, but the lake shines still, and visited one year of the last 10,000, a particular mallard may be resting afloat in the rose-dyed water. A single Anita Brave follows the shoreline in AD 1700. A white settler's child is drowned in 1809 after milking. The mother's grief succeeded by sadness, then forgetfulness preparing the noon meal, and irritation at a bothersome fly. Sunsets reel back, and the mornings of misty sun unwind on the marsh. Axe blows resound from the clearing, and visited at some particular time, plodding horses are crossing the lake ice. Cornfields ripple in fields nearby. Owen Roblin's full beard blows in the wind, lashing east across the lake. And he goes back to the grist mill, where something is forgotten. At certain times, the visitor sees nothing at all. The wind has turned cold. Summer birds gone. The Anita hunter is somewhere else. Cottagers stay inside their gay little houses. And the still air might register 50 degrees below zero, if there were any thermometer to measure with. And flashing lights that banner the northern sky sink down and glimmer on the ice. The visitor can consider himself unlucky, but he may choose a different day. Now there is no one at home. A note. A note on method. For years now, I've absorbed through osmosis, blunted intuition, and even via the intellect, a composite picture of what critics think a poet should be. First in the list of qualities the poet should have is an individual style, a quality of uniqueness in his writing that would make him instantly identifiable to a Braille reader under the Atlantic Ocean at midnight. To me, this academic demand is very similar to the father who... exhorts his son to be somebody. Merely to be is not enough. One must acquire, to the extent of idiosyncrasy, the same uniqueness. One must stand for something, speak from a leaning stance, be positive in one's judgments, lusty in one's enjoyments, and above everything else, be on the side of life, be, above all things, consistent. It follows, I think, that to possess all the qualities enumerated tediously above, and to be absolutely unmistakable in even the smallest minor masterpiece, one also tends to develop a remarkable sameness. But the qualified critic will accept this sameness, watch for its earmarks, like an astronomer viewing a moveless sky. The point I'm trying to make here is that a poet who embodies the above qualities is not really unique at all. He's damn dull. For uniqueness itself is just another form of conformity. The so-called individual style has become a synonym and trademark. More than any other symbol, a trademark is repetitive conformity. If you doubt this thesis, take a look at the limited areas of thought and even conformity. The Enchanted Echo. This book was published in 1944, privately printed by Clark and Stewart. It's the first in Vancouver. It's the first book I had out, and my attitudes toward the poems are possibly will come through in my reading. I don't mean them to, but they probably do. They're very early primitives that I'm not too fond of now. The Enchanted Echo. I saw the milkweed float away, to curtsy, climb, and hover, and seek among the crowded hills another warmer lover. Across the autumn-flushing streams, adown the misty valleys, atop the skyline sharp redoubts, a swarm with colored alleys. I caught an echo in my hands with pollen mixed for leaven. I gave it half my song to hold and sent it back to heaven. Now oft, anon, as in a dream, o'er sculptured heights descending, I hear a song, my song, but now it has another ending. Lay of the Last Mariner. I shall have need of many things with you, my dear, among them. Live poets, pets, and wedding rings, dead thieves and those who hung them. Swashbucklers, braggarts by the score, O kindred heart, I love you. We shall encounter unknown shore with darkling clouds above you. We shall drop anchor in the sky and troll for wealthy bankers. At Hayti, with expression sly, we'll drill for oil on tankers. We shall take on a varied crew of long-dead sailors' daughters, conquistadors and Irish stew, gray shorthand clerks and blotters. Mayhap the world will think us daft by any standard measure, and giggle when we sink a shaft, for Blackbeard teaches treasure. At Barbados we'll stay a while to fill our empty purses. My one repayment is your smile at these my foolish verses. The lights go on. I should like to watch Trafalgar Square when rain comes down, to see the tiny children stop and stare in London town. The gay reflections race with Big Ben's chime and gleaming ways. That memory would last a little time of all my days. I should like to see the storied Thames circled and ringed with silver as a fairy aspen stems, Pegasus winged. The streets where Shakespeare strolled, Johnson strayed with Celia Long. Leftovers of the nights when Burbage played and Herrick's song. Mayhap the bombs have scattered dreams afar, but Caxton's shop stands proud, aloof from wreckage, not a scar where buses stop. There are timeless things that cannot change, while love forgives. The dying men made certain, is it strange that England lives? Arena's song. Arena born of Vesta's flame, you purchased beauty with your name. The mossy woods your footsteps knew, and nereid where the wildflowers grew, and poised above some marble pool, the painted setting of a jewel. What music stirred your dancing feet when hours were brief and life was sweet? What laurel wreaths enthroned your brow, whose elder gods are sleeping now? In some dim age beside the sea, she lived in Greek mythology, and no one knows from whence she came. Arena of the lovely name. The Watchers. Gray dim were the clothes that covered long table and sideboard tall. Gray web festoons hanging downward like a suddenly ended ball, where gaiety was suspended in some mysterious way, and revel was somehow broken. The fiddler forgot to play. The dancers scurried like shadows and hid in a closet dark, awaiting two of their number who strolled alone to the park. And still they hide in the corners, till cramped in his arms and knees, one murmured unpracticed fingers or ghostly piano keys. The others applaud and beckon, and swaying the curtains shake, and tremors march up the windows, blank windows fronting the lake. Grown tired of their endless waiting, they dance by the drooping fern, still waiting the two young lovers who never in life return. Summons to Vagabonds. Cousins of the gypsy clan, rise and join me, I'm your man. Following eternal Pan, down the road forever. Amiable and worldly wise, Marco Polo's brother. Poor existence, one replies, I would have no other. Close the shutters, turn me out, bar the door and lock it. Pray for me with tone devout, empty purse and pocket. April mother, mortgage time with your ageless teaching. Lift the lowest from the grime, windless summits reaching. past the rose-red arbors high, mark my steps and follow, trace and track, nor question why, one with wheeling swallow. Oh, turn me homeless from your door, dub me daft a danger, lest I infect my deadly lore in some perfect stranger. I have heard the thrush's song, stood entranced and listened, just aside the milling throng, where a dewdrop glistened. Cousins of the gypsy clan, troubadours of ragged pan, outlaws since the world began, I am waiting for you. Turnabout. Green slacks in the early twilight walk with me, half alarmed. Mischievous and enchanting, soft lips the weird folk charmed. Green slacks while the cows trooped homeward, inconsequential, gay, tripped conversational shallows, spoke lightly, held at bay the words that I had not uttered, damned by her unconcern, leashed tightly my unheard phrases, with eyes part kind yet stern, wickedly measuring glances, with manner falsely brisk, demurely lifting her lashes in calculated risk. At the split rail fence we lingered, what did you want to say? That half-heard astounding sentence stole all my words away. Green slacks, did I say I loved you? No doubt, but nonetheless, I admired the darkened country, casually picked to press some maple leaves for memory. Damp was the grass and loam, and I said, we'd best be going, it's late, and turned for home. Votaries of April. Oh, up, my lads, 'tis April, and the boughs are all asway, with tidings of the rover who is coming home today, the lord of all the wander kind to dream the years away. No connoisseur or dilettante, but robed in royal green, he's waiting at the border where the budding willows lean, to search for that forgotten land that men have never seen. He loves to sing the song of earth, the chant of Arcady, that whispers from the meadowland the chorus of the sea, whose laurel eye have set their seal upon the heart of me. He chants the world alive again, those children of the sun, all brown and breathless creatures at his tidings turn and run to tell the old world mother that the joyous chase is done. It is follow, 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 is ringing through the hills. It rises o'er the nodding trees, the plaintive whippoorwills, to vanish in a misty haze of April daffodils. Oh, it's follow, 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 the old allure returns. A piper's song of other lands, the heart within me yearns. And Arcady is nearly here, it's just beyond the ferns. In memoriam, Engelbert Dollfuss, pre-war Chancellor of Austria. He had a deprecating air, slightly comic name, a little man, hallmarked with care, who shunned the crowd's acclaim. Tired, lined, and wan, a young old face, cut down in mid-career. White candles seemed in death to trace pale glory on his bier. I have no doubt he loved green land, old friends, and circling sky. A dreamer neath tall stars to stand, even as you and I. I have no doubt his life was sweet, his wife and children dear, though tiny human hopes are fleet, dissolving dust and fear. But also, I have little doubt, wherever he may be, he knows the lights that hate turned out are blazing endlessly. He knows, though death may visit earth, as come he must and will, the life that Bethlehem gave birth works shining wonders still. Eccentricity. Because I loved the sea, I built a house on a spit of land, reaching a slender finger, like a child in a pot of jam, eager and yet afraid lest he be caught. There I hear the tide's low monotone, the sanguine waves in ceaseless wild uproar. The old house creaks and whispers, answering the small communications of the waves. There in storms the chandelier swings outward, wine glasses tremble on the sideboard shelf. My house seems to be part of that green monster, not belonging to the builder any more. I open the sturdy oaken door and listen. Out of that illimitable darkness comes some fragment of the ageless truth I follow, and my old house and I are well content. Spring Dialogue. Four brown infant sparrows sitting on a fence, Nesting time is over. Let the play commence. Chirping conversations. Oh, the world is wide. Rivers rushing endless, ribbon roads beside. Oh, the world is lovely. Moonlight-dusted pool. Comes the famished winter, it is all so cruel. Think you we should venture, aimless vagabonds, serfs of footless freedom seeking new beyonds? Oh, the world is awesome, we should wait a while, till the wind requickens through the forest aisle. Mayhap those long and awkward beings down below hunt us when the twilight shades her amber glow. Nay, your words are foolish. Climb aloft and find keys to vanished kingdoms, clouds with opaline. See, my wings are lifted. See how brave am I. Checkered fields receding. Hear the white wind cry. Oh, the world is shining. Oh, the wind is cool. May you find a haven when the world is cruel. Voice from the past. Someday I shall capture a rainbow from Babylon's sunken shores, with colors and gay tints contending, rival a little by yours. I shall roll up the sky like a carpet, though none save you will believe it isn't a gaudy bucera. You it shall never deceive. Shall conjure a splendid palace, cool drinks the sybarite sips, and wrench a red rose that has vanished from Babylon courtesan's lips. We'll laugh in the sun and be happy, for they would have wished it so, those wicked, magnificent people, dream caravans lost in the snow. They kindle a fire from dead ashes and flung it through reaches of night. For you are the heirs of our future. Be happy. We died that you might. The enchanted echo continued to a cat-shaped ashtray, a trivial, unimportant cat with impudence for ears. Through smoking butts of cigarettes, a whiskered satyr leers. Sometimes I wink and laugh at him, or is it her, perhaps? His rigid fur upreaches high when passing mongrel yaps. Sometimes he whispers, murmuring in constant feline glee. Sometimes I wink, imagining that he winks back at me. His gray metallic features turn as if to say, I'm not one of the ordinary alley kind, what utter childish rot. I'm Egypt's bast, whom jealous gods imprison slightly here. It's only temporary, mind, this lull in my career. I look at him in disbelief, his red protruding tongue, and venom glance that swept the Nile when pyramids were young. Sometimes his yellow eyeballs shine, and Thebes is close at hand, while reeling firefly lanterns gleam through Pharaoh's dusk-filled land. Sometimes through quiet's ebbing void, a fleeting wraith-like stir. Gray smoke is drifting down the wall, a part-imagined purr. Sometimes strange visions haunt the smoke, like marijuana dream. Through shrouded temple walls at night, the cat gods softly scream. And lilac incense hovers close. Oh, no, it cannot be. A something brushes past my leg, and Bast is broken free. Coyote Saga. The hinterland reaches are barren, foregathered the cactus and sage. My cousins have haunted the barren and followed the overland stage. Since men did away with the flintlock, their arrows were ever too slow. What weapon succeeded the flintlock? My people are scattered like snow. We trailed them and camped on their leavings. They scorned but respected us too. Our children grew fat in their leavings, and nightly our followers grew. They danced in the glare of the campfire, with feather and bones in their hair. We skirted the wigwam and campfire, but ah, they still knew we were there. Like phantoms in moonlight we gathered, on wagon trails tangled with grass. In wake of invaders we gathered, and saw the swift trail riders pass. The white man, ah, great was his cunning. The prairies are sterile no more. He bartered and throve with his cunning. He turned the nights red with his war. We ventured no more to the valleys. We scattered, were hunted, and ran. The red man was gone from the valleys, and we far away in their van. Like woodfire half smothered in embers, a or spring rain forgotten at noon. Like sparks in the midst of gray embers, undaunted we worship the moon. Our loping dark hordes and our numbers are vanished, gaunt bones lying pale. Uneasy the term of our slumbers, near-ended, death-patterned, our tale. Genghis Khan, in black lacquer and armor, the go-by horsemen come, dark riders of the outlands, the children of the grasslands, outriders of the drum. With crossbow on their saddle and scouts sent on ahead, gray kinsmen of the north wind, the lean and famished north wind, where no man hears their tread. With lolling easy motion, the red-haired Khan rides on, from Cathay unto Europe, the rock frontiers of Europe, and half the world anon. The horsemen fade and vanish like markings on a scroll. The half-lit moon was gleaming, and lacquered armor gleaming, as through the dust they stole. As stars that wane by morning, like surf that sounds no more, a stone dropped in a river, gray ripples rode the river to touch the farthest shore. The sprite, dry lustrous hair of beaten gold had she, with frigid glance like winter's cold for me, two lips like petals windward blown, her hands were soft as Sappho's own, and we were somewhat happy, slightly gay, through interstices of the day, but I could conjure phantoms in her eyes, like misty ghosts that sink and rise, while shy impressions floated back and forth, and dimples flickered west by north to meet, and glad abandon in her lips, like crimson sails in passing ships. And sweet were little looks that I surprised, whereby I straightway recognized defeat. Tamerlane the Limper. My saddlebags are empty and my camel trains are thin. We roam the heights of Samarkand to watch the dawn come in. The merchants here are wary as they hear my hooves again, for they've heard the bells a-tinkling of a phantom caravan. My kinsmen ride on either hand with tempered mounts and true, the old sure pace and certain touch that marks my chosen few, the fierce mustache, the youthful skill with bridle, bit, and spear, the haughty gaze that brooks no pause, no equal and no peer, save I, who hold my eagle's leash with gentle touch and firm, with little care they endure through life's allotted term. Though cities, kingdoms, empires fade, and dynasties may fall, and down the granite mountainside the inch-long traders crawl, the old perspectives change and veer, and with the wind are gone, still drifts the sound of phantom bells a-tinkling in the dawn. When caravans surmount the hills surrounding Samarkand, they seem to feel relinquishing a mailed and armored hand. With chilling violence and hate, the granite cliffs are high. They bow before a limping man with empires in his eye. Declaration of Faith. He is not dead. I call to mind his image, crystal clear. He is not dead. My eyes are blind and I refuse to hear. He does but sleep with wakeful heart and quickened pulse, for he is mindful of pale buds that start and swallow serenity. He does but pause a while until the river banks are green, and hesitant the winds are still and petal paths between. He does but rest and slumber soft, say I, like cradle pool. To break the spell, a bluebird coughed and touched his forehead cool. So shall I fail to recognize poor relics sent to me. So shall the hand of one more wise recall him from the sea.